That's fantastic. Great. Hi, Alan. Great. Fantastic to have everyone on the call. Everyone's just logging in now. Fantastic. So let's kick off the call tonight. Now, I'm hearing my voice in the background. So let me know if you guys have any questions. You can type it into the chat box if you do, or otherwise me, so I'm not hearing myself. Thank you. So who would like to kick off with some questions? Okay. All right, guys. This week has been quite exciting. We've obviously had quite a few students doing deals. It's a new financial year. Quite a few people have got set up their SMSF and starting to look at commercial property in their SMSF. So that has been really fantastic. Just the latest update in terms of if you're setting up your own SMSF and you're thinking about the timeline in terms of borrowing, in terms of getting contracts done and all those things. So I'm just going through that process even myself for my parents. So so I've been speaking to quite a few brokers, my accountants, solicitors, so just trying to put everything together. So you need to actually, from what I've been doing and looking at, I've used a company called SMSF Warehouse. I found them to be quite fantastic. They have a very low maintenance cost because one of the things for SMSF is always the maintenance cost going forward. So I found that they charge a monthly fee. So they charge about $39 a month if you just have cash. But if you're going to go, once you start buying a property, they charge $79 a month, but it includes all of your auditing and all your financials and accounting at the end of the year, which is quite good because it averages out to be less than $1,000, which I think it's quite worthwhile. I have, doing what I've done is I've realized that you actually need to set up, it's a corporate trustee for your SMSF. And then you need to sort of look at setting up both the custodian trust with a bare trust before you can borrow. Now, the reason you need to actually set up the custodian trust and the bare trust is that you have to set those up before you actually sign the contract. So if you're looking at your SMSF, you need to actually set that structure up before you can actually go and sign a contract for a property. And that's also the you'll need to actually lodge an application form for a loan under the bare trust, and you will well, that's what sort of at the moment that's what I'm doing, and the deposit for the property needs to come out of your actual SMSF. So what I've done on one of the properties for my parents is actually the property came up before all of their structures were in place. So what I've done is told the agent that yes, I'm happy to hold the property by putting in a deposit, but the deposit need to be refunded. So I signed an offer to purchase form, giving them a rough timeline of when the SMSF that my parents were setting up was going to be ready to sign documentation. And then they accepted that. I gave them 21 days. They accepted that, and I put in a deposit as a holding deposit on the condition that once the SMSF is set up, they would refund the deposit to me and that a new deposit will come out of the SMSF and the contract be signed under the name of the SMSF or the bare trust. So that's what I've been doing. And recently my broker said that to me that you can even if you don't have all your money rolled over into the SMSF, you can actually start, if there is money in the account for a deposit, you can actually pay the deposit, sign the contract, as long as all of your money is rolled into the SMSF before settlement. Then, because the bank needs to see evidence before settlement, as long as it's all rolled in, then that is fine. So essentially, that gives you a lot more time because you've got 30 days for finance. Typically, with SMSF, you would request plus an additional 35 or 40 days for settlement. So that should give you plenty of time for you to roll over anything you need for your SMSF. Yeah. So that's my update on that. I've got a question come through. So I'm going to read this question from Sophia and Bruce. It says, "Hi Helen, we have a question. When a tenant's signing up a 3 or 5 year lease, how much of an increase can we do for the lease per year? The reason for this question is we are flipping it after 12 or 15 months, it will make it more enticing for the buyer to buy because of the rental increase percentage per month. Hope this makes sense. Yes, so Sophia and Bruce, normally I try to aim for at least a minimum of 3% increases a year. In certain circumstances, 4%. And if you're the more closer you are to Metro, the higher you can with your percentage increases. Right now in Sydney Metro, you can see 5 to 6% increases per year. I've seen that Melbourne can do 4 to 5% in CBD and definitely 4% in Brisbane as well. So I would say the closer you are to your CBD, the easiest to actually get that in rental increases, but minimum 3%, but preferably if you can try for 4, that would be really good. The property I've just recently bought in Cairns has got a 4% increase, so even in regional areas you can get 4%. So I would aim for 4 first and see where you end up. You might end up with 3, but that's still better than CPI. So the percentage per year, if you can get above CPI, it's actually pretty good. So hopefully that answers your question. Anyone else has a question regarding anything regarding what I've said regarding the SMSF or anything regarding that question for Sophia or Bruce?
Hi Helen, this is Amelia here. Just checking with increases in regional, it's in line with CPI, and obviously in regional areas CPI is lower than urban, isn't it?
It's lower than sorry, what was the last one?
Metro.
The CPI usually sits at the moment, it's sitting between 1.5 to 1.9. So Sydney's got a different CPI to Brisbane CPI to the Melbourne CPI. So it depends on where your property is located, in which state. They will specify the CPI for that state. I think the last time I had a look at an invoice for when I was doing just recently one of the analysing a deal for one of the students, she showed me an invoice that had a CPI for Rockhampton and that was sitting at 1.5%, and that was last year's CPI. It's not due for an increase this year yet. So, but I know that in Sydney recently, we've done a increase on a property on a CPI, and that was around 1.9. So, so it varies from state to state. If it's a 3%, it's higher than the market at the moment in CPI across the board.
Okay, thanks, Helen.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. So if anyone has any questions, please jump in. Otherwise, I'm just going to talk a little bit generally about commercial. So I'll talk a little bit about mixed tenancies and vacancies and rental guarantees, because that's come up a lot in the last week in the deals that I've assessed for quite a few students, because I've got quite a few students at the moment moving into multi-tenanted properties or multi-tenanted properties in short leases. So the first point is sometimes the tenant on shorter leases because the vendor actually prefers the tenant to be on shorter leases. So it may not be your preference, but for some vendors it works out fine, especially vendors that are local. So if the vendor is local and they may be in the similar trade, or they might have used certain parts of the building themselves, I found that there's times where they actually prefer the tenant to be on 12, 18 months or 2-year leases. So they're on relatively shorter leases because they've always have the option to then sort of either to do something with that property, or they said, oh, they can go back and occupy it. So there is always so they're on shorter leases, also an example for the vendor to actually put up the rent as well. So they do a rental review. So that's And when you come in as an incoming purchaser, you can certainly try to get them all on longer leases. So you can negotiate to get them onto longer leases, or try to ask the tenant or give the tenant some incentives to see if they can go on longer leases. So you might offer them a 3-year lease and see what happens. And but if the tenant is already on a lease, so they might be on a 2-year lease and only 1 year in, then you need to realize that, you know, you need to give the tenant some kind of incentive for them to actually start a new lease with you. The other thing is, I find that with all properties that have multi-tenants in them, you always need to tweak them somewhat. So they're not going to, all the leases might not be perfect. It's very rare you find a property, a multi-tenanted property, where all the leases line up and everything is perfect. They usually need some tweaking. You usually get one in there that's on a periodical, which is month to month, and it's about how to negotiate with that tenant to get them onto a longer term as well. The rental guarantee. Now, the rental guarantee, in my experience, most of the time it's there until you find a tenant. And then they stop. Now, one of the first times I did, I came across a rental guarantee, I just basically took it as it is. But now, in hindsight, now I know better, because I've now worded it more to rental guarantees, buying a property into rental guarantees, that it needs to be when they actually pay, when you actually receive rent from the tenant. So from the incoming tenant, because in the past I've had the situation where I read a rental guarantee as well, as soon as you can use part of that to incentivize your new tenants, and therefore you're not out of pocket. So for example, if you've got a 12-month rental guarantee, you can essentially offer a tenant 12-month rent free or 6-month rent free, and it shouldn't void your rental guarantee if it's worded properly. Now, it's a very grey area, and the previous vendor can argue that you've got a tenant in there, so therefore we don't have to pay any more. Now, I've had the same situation come up with me, that we got the tenant in there, and they have, you know, 6 months rent free, so technically, you know, we had the rental guarantee till the end of the year, so technically we didn't need, we use that as an incentive. But the previous vendor, being local, chucked up a fuss, and so we end up coming to negotiations, and they said, look, we'll just give you an additional 3 months, but we're not going to pay you to the end of the year, so we just sort of half the difference, which was fine. You know, it's still an extra 3 months, better than nothing. But I've since then become very careful with the rental guarantee. I made sure that if there was a rental guarantee, that it needs to cover that I can use it as an incentive, which is why I see the importance of having a rental guarantee. You can really use it as an incentive to attract the next new tenant, and therefore you are not having any out-of-pocket costs. So it should be rental guarantee should help you to pay for the cost of leasing as well as that incentive. And so it's important to get that worded right. And essentially, it's also, you got to treat it as, it's also in a sense a roundabout discount from the vendor that they're providing you. So they're basically leasing back part of the premise from you at 2 years, but the 2 years is conditional that you know, that if you find a tenant, they'll be allowed to vacate. So if you're borrowing, you're not buying the property outright, it looks better on the bank that there's a rental guarantee in place, because they know the bank can calculate that it's the full rent coming through rather than partially vacant, because partially vacant can damage your serviceability. So having a rental guarantee also helps with that as well. Yeah, so I find that when you put in the offer, it's important to work to make sure that you put in the offer, the rental guarantee, you want it to be specific on those terms. Yeah, so, but I do find that, you know, with multi-tenant properties, you do need to put some work in. A lot of that work is the upfront period while you're in the due diligence period, and some of the work are in the first 1 to 2 months after you settle to make sure everything ticks over. And once you get it to that point, it should just run on autopilot. There's always going to be more issues that come up than single-tenanted properties, but in the long term, remember, you are going to have the potential of having 3 lots of rental increases a year. You are going to have the potential of more growth or things you can tweak to it. So all those things as well. Has anyone got any questions regarding that? Okay. About anything regarding commercial property, has anyone got a question regarding Okay.
Yeah, hello, Adrian here.
Hey, hi Adrian, how are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. How often would you come across, you know, this rental guarantee? I mean, I'm not familiar with it at all, you know, and I just caught most of what you were saying. Is it a normal thing for rental for there to be a rental guarantee?
Only on multi-tenanted properties. It only comes up
only
for multi-tenanted properties. It doesn't come up on vacant.
Okay.
The vacant property is just vacant property. It only comes up in multi-tenant properties or in off the plan properties.
Yeah.
So the builder or the developer will often give you a 12-month rental guarantee. So instead of giving you a discount up front for the purchase of the property, they'll give you a rental guarantee afterwards at an X percent of your purchase price. So they might give you an 8% yield. When it comes to developers, I get to be a bit cautious because I like to find out from the agent what exactly is the yield afterwards. So is it really an 8% when it's built in that market, or is it more like a 6%? So, and you've also, I find that when it comes to off the plans, in my experience, you need to also, again, pay attention to make sure that the wording is done properly, because sometimes developers have known to sort of be in cahoots with agents, and they do put a tenant in there, but there's a temporary tenant, and it might be a tenant that only stays 6 or 12 months, and therefore you voided your rental guarantee, but you're not really getting a benefit out of it. So, so it's a little bit different from multi-tenanted ones, but yeah, that's the only two times that rental guarantees come up. Vacant property is just the vacant property, if it's one single tenant in there.
Yeah.
But one way to really build that growth and equity in your property is to buy a property, or maybe a multi-tenanted property with one vacant, so that you still have the two that supports the cash, that supports the repayments on the property, gives you a little bit of cash flow, and then you can buy in potentially a little bit cheaper, and then you can actually get an uplift by tenanting the other one. Okay.
Thanks,
Helen. It's all right. I've got a question here regarding from Peter regarding leasing agent and property management typically costs. What should you expect to pay? Peter, anywhere from 10% to 15% of your first year's rent. So 10% plus GST if it's a lease under 2 years, anything above 3 years, so anything above two, so you, when you're into your 3 year leases, it's like 11-12% of your first year's rent. If you're looking at a 5 year lease or above, it usually goes somewhere around 15%. Now you can negotiate on that, you know, you can knock down, you know, a percentage here and there, but that's pretty standard across the board, and it's equivalent to about 1 to 2 months of your rent. So say you're on a 5 year lease, it's probably equivalent to about close to 2 months of your rent. If you're on a 1 year or a 2 year lease, it's probably equivalent to more like a 1 month rent. So it's only of the first year. The other thing that in terms of management, it's sort of management fits, sits anywhere between 4% to 7% that I've seen. The most important thing to pay attention to regarding those fees is to make sure that you are not charged a fee when your tenant exercises their option. A lot of the times the agents slip that in there, and they charge you, you know, a 5% or something like that of, you know, the first year's rent for the tenant exercising an option. You're like, well, the tenant's exercising option is just sending you an email. It takes them literally no time, and I see it as part of the agent's job anyway. So hopefully that's helped you with those, answering that question. Got another question come in. Kalan. Hi, Helen. Do you need to include all your conditions up front when you make the offer, or can it include additional conditions after your solicitor has reviewed the contract before you sign it? Kalan, I'm sorry I keep pronouncing your name wrong, but you have to include all of your conditions up front in your offer, because the agent is going to draft the contract based on your offer, and the vendor is going to make a decision on your offer based on what's the conditions of it. So they might have multiple offers on the table. Like recently, one of my students was in a silent auction thing where they had multiple offers on the table, and it all came down to the conditions of the offer. So if you find yourself in that position, which for you could be, then you know it's all based on how clean the offer is. So the most thing you're really guarding against, when the most thing you can't beat is if there is an unconditional cash offer. If there's an unconditional cash offer that comes in on the table, the vendor will take that over any other offer. So even if it's a little bit less, they will take that, because they know they don't have to go through the subject to due diligence, subject to finance. The contract can go unconditional from day one, and the agent wants that because, you know, it's a sure sale. Everything else, I think that unless it's funny conditions, most of the time your conditions are going to be pretty standard, which is your due diligence, your personal inspection, and your due diligence, personal inspection, pest and building, and finance. So it's only really those four. It's just a matter of your timing as well. Yeah. I've got another follow-up question from Peter. Thanks, Helen. Is it typical for them to charge a percentage on the outgoings as well? Peter, it's normally they charge on gross rent. So if you're not actually paying for the if they're not paying for outgoings, you're not paying for out, and the tenant's paying for outgoings, sometimes the depends on how much the rent is, then they actually will charge a percentage of, it's basically a 5% of all the money they receive, not just the rent. But it is negotiable. You can always negotiate with them on that. So the smaller your rent is, so for example, if your rent is $14,000-$15,000, then sometimes it's not worthwhile to an agent unless they charge you sort of basically their percentage, which is say 5% of all money coming in from that property. Whereas if you had a property that might be $1 million and you're doing $100,000, then they might go, okay, we're only going to charge you, you know, 5% on the net rent. So it needs to be worth their while. Now, recently for my Cairns property, you know, I've been trying to find a property manager up in Cairns, and, you know, I went to CBRE, I went to Knight Frank, and they both had a minimum charge. They basically said our minimum charge is $3,600 a year, and therefore, you know, anything less than that is not worthwhile. So that's what my previous vendor was paying. She was paying CBRE $3,600 a year to manage a property that was giving them $14,000 in rent, which was crazy. You know, now I have found a property manager in Cairns, who is now giving me 4.5% across but she's charging that on top of both my outgoings and the rent. So anything that she gets in pretty much from that property. I understand that, because if she was just purely charging on the rent, they'll just get about $700 a year, which really doesn't cover their cost of sort of doing all their accounting and anything else. Yeah, so hopefully that's answered that question. A follow-up question from Carlon. So it's standard that they give you a blank contract without any details and only give the full completed contract when you make the offer. Yes, Carlon, for you, where your property is located in Queensland, the contract is subject to the conditions you're going to put into that contract. So the contract itself is blank until you make an offer, and then you can fill in all of the stuff in there. So they can't, it's not like the New South Wales contract or the Victoria contract where there's a lot more conditions that they can put into it, or there's searches they attach to it. In Queensland, the searches are on you to choose to do. So some people do no searches if they're going unconditional. So therefore, the contract is only about 15, 18 pages and it's blank. So you insert all the conditions in there. So usually you give the agent an offer. The agent, once it's accepted, the agent will populate that contract with everything that's in your offer. Peter's got a question. Can you pass management costs onto the tenant? Only if it's in the lease. So I have seen leases that allowed for management fees to be passed on to the tenant. So that's called a triple net lease, where you actually pass the details, you pass all of your outgoings to the tenant, including management fees. So yes, if the tenant agrees, they by all means you can pass it on to them. I have seen some in smaller sort of tenants under 500,000, and yeah, so it's doable as long as your tenant agrees. So Calon has a follow-up question. So they can't fill in the vendors and the lease details first on the contract and just leave out your offer and conditions to enter later. Calon, normally they give you, they will fill that in as part of them filling in the contract once the offer has been accepted and agreed to. So if you've got, normally you would, as part of you making an offer on the property, you will have the lease, the information memorandum, and so you already know the vendor's details. You can get all the vendor's details from the actual lease. All the vendor's details are on the lease. It's also, some of it might be on the information memorandum, but just refer to the lease. So you don't actually need it to be filled in on the contract until it's all finalised, because you've got that information everywhere. Calon, you said you have a follow-up question. So you have the contract for the solicitor to review before making an offer. No, that doesn't apply to Queensland. It applies certainly in New South Wales and in Victoria if you want. But in Queensland, there's not much to review of a contract because the contract is solely based on your offer. You can get a solicitor to review your lease before you make an offer, but what will happen to that is that the solicitor will charge you for their time, so usually maybe $500 for them to review the lease for you, and whether you decide to go ahead or not, it's up to you. They will just simply comment on the lease. They won't tell you if it's a good lease or a bad lease, they just comment on what it has, and it's up to you to make the decision. The standard practice in Queensland is that you make, as soon as you like a property and you see a property that is worthwhile and you get the information memorandum and the lease, what you do is you take that property off the market by making an offer subject to due diligence, finance, pest and building, and maybe even personal inspection if you choose to go and see it. And they usually, I would give it anything between 14 to 21 days for those things, and then at a purchase price. And once you've got that and it's agreed to, then that you pay a deposit, but that's a holding deposit, so that deposit is refunded to you if you decide not to go ahead. So if you decide to pull out because you weren't satisfied with due diligence, then you can pull out. They will refund you in full your deposit. So you're not actually losing out. I believe in from memory, and just do check this with your solicitor, for both New South Wales and Victoria, there's a minor fee if you decide to cancel out on the contract, that so you don't get your full deposit back. So you might end up losing a couple of thousand dollars. But yeah, just check that with your solicitor before you put a deposit through in those two states. But definitely in Queensland, you get your full deposit back. So that's why properties go really fast in Queensland, is as soon as someone sees it, they like it, they start negotiating on the price, and the conditions are your finance due diligence, that are the two main ones, and then they take that off the market. So once it's off the market, no one else can make an offer on it. They prepare the contract, and then off you go with your due diligence. If at any time you're not satisfied with the due diligence, you just pull out, which is quite common as well. Calon's question is, what if the IM and the lease figures are different? Do you just use the lease? Yes, lease is the binding contract. The binding contract is the legal document that your solicitor and the bank will use. So that is the one you refer to. The information memorandum is usually put together either by the agent or the office staff. So it's not always accurate, especially when it comes to the rent and sometimes the rental increases because they often forget to project the rent forward, or because it's sometimes if it goes through by CPI, it's a bit hard for them to work out what CPI was 3 years ago. So they're only taking that information off from the vendor. So it can be a little bit off. So hopefully that's helped to clarify for you. Any other questions? Okay, there's another question from Remy. Okay, what are the things to consider when you negotiate for a property? Hi, Remy. Now, with the when you negotiate on a property, the things to consider is firstly depending on the type of property, you look at the tenant first. My first thing is you go to the tenant and you look at them and you look at and you do an educated guesstimate to your best of your ability, because no one can foresee the future, but you make a guesstimate of what you think, how long the tenant will be there. So I find out the history of the tenant, whether they've been there for the first term, second term, or they've been there for in the past, the type of tenant, the type of tenants they are and how good they've been in sort of paying their rent, and whether they've exercised an option and likelihood of staying here in the future. Things to negotiate on is really comes down, the main things in the future is your pest and building. So if you're in a strata property you're buying, there's not much else to negotiate on except your own condition. So it's your price, and you're subject to finance and subject to sort of personal inspection and due diligence. But if you're buying a freestanding building, that's where you'll start to negotiate when you look at things like your pest and building report comes back, and there might be structural issues, there might be things that need to be done to the property, and that's where you, in your due diligence phase, you will negotiate that. So for example, if there was crack, I see this in quite a few building reports, is that there is sometimes water damage. So there might be some water damage in the kitchen, or there might be some water leaks from a previous storm, things to make sure those things are fixed. Or there's also always down pipes that are cracked, air conditioning vents or old air conditioning units that are lying about on the roof or somewhere that hasn't been removed. All those things you can go back and negotiate on. So and of course, any of issues regarding compliance is something that the vendor needs to sort out. So things like, electrical compliance, fire compliance, asbestos, all of those things, including certain times when they've got mezzanine floors, those things, any of those compliance things, you need to get the vendor to sort out, and those are things you can negotiate for them to do before settlement. So does that help with your question, Remy?
Helen, Amelia again. So if you're buying a strata complex, you do not see the need for building and pest. Is that right? So if there's cracks there, will the cracks all be maintained by strata?
Yes. So structural issues are maintained by strata. So that's why you pay your sinking fund. So you won't need pest and building for strata. Remy's got a follow-up question. Can you change your offer after your due diligence? Yes. The short answer is yes. The long answer to that is it can be a bit complicated. So you can change your offer. The main thing you're changing in the offer is probably price. So the most times most people do is after they see the building and pest, they go back and try to negotiate either for works to be done before settlement, or they want a cash discount, or alternatively they if the valuation came in lower, they might want a discount price to match. It doesn't mean the vendor will say yes, but we've had times where the vendor have said yes. When it comes to works being done on the property, most of the time, I would say that 90% of the time, the vendor will say yes to doing it or getting some form of the work fixed up. When it comes to valuations, whether the vendor will meet you when the valuation goes lower, that's a really 50-50% chance. Now, I've had times where the vendor flat out said no. I've had times where the vendor had said yes, have given a discount, and I've had times where the vendor have given some discount. So say you're short $30,000, they've agreed to give you a $10,000 discount. So it's a range, and it's totally up to the discretion of the vendor. I've had times where the vendor cancelled a contract because they refused to give an amount. So yes, you can change your offer, but mainly that's a price thing, and it's really up to the vendor to decide if they want it or not. And that depends on how badly they want the sale and how invested they are in the sale. Thanks, Remy. That's good. Amelia, Junior, just your question regarding if there was cracks or anything in the building, you should refer that to the actual strata and ask them, or if they've produced a report or if they've had that looked at, whether it's settling cracks, you can refer that to strata to see what they've done about it in the past. And that might help you regarding finding out a bit more about the building. And I guess they may...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got a follow-up question from... So Remy said, just in case you find something during due diligence. Yes, if you do find something during due diligence, definitely go back to the vendor first as your point of call. So Calon has got another question regarding, when can you ask the property manager how a tenant has been with their rent, etc.? Only once you have the property under contract or beforehand too? The short answer is you can ask them any time. But most of the time, they are only going to be really forthcoming when you've got the property under contract. So before then, they will probably talk to you, and they will give you information. But definitely in Queensland, they are a lot more forthcoming with the information, and they actually help you a lot with getting through your due diligence once the property is under contract. If it's not under contract, then they're not so great with providing additional information for you. So the really, just to sort of recap, and this is why conveyancing is different in every state in Australia. So if you're not sure, make sure you actually either ask the agent or contact a local solicitor how that would work in that state. So each state is different. And when I first went to Queensland, I asked the agent, do you mind running me through the conditions that most people put into a contract? So he ran through it with me. Do you mind telling me how much usually is this time? And do you mind telling me what the standard settlement time is that they can do in Queensland? So they'll tell you these things. And then, you know, to verify some of the things, you know, I call my broker up and says, well, how fast can the bank settle in Queensland? Because I've had agents tell me they can do it in 14 days. You know, for me, 14 days is a very short amount of time. So, you know, call up the broker and says, well, is that doable? And they say, yes, probably in a pinch, but mostly you want to have 30 days. So, you know, then you sort of know where you are in the range. And this helps you to understand how people work in that area. And sort of going to Queensland, you know, having a agent being able to give me a background and then going to speak to my broker who tells me, yes, you know, rough timeline for them to settle, help me to get a gauge overall. And then I know that, you know, in that particular state, you can take it's quite common practice that people take properties off the market subject to due diligence and subject to finance. And then if they don't like it, they just walk away and they've got nothing to lose. So it actually is a great opportunity for you starting out, because you're at no loss, but if you do see a property, you don't want to get gazumped on that property, you can always take it off the market. Now, a different scenario in New South Wales, again, different scenario in Victoria. So, you know, you want to just make sure you're across that so that you're not losing out on it. In New South Wales, the contract goes unconditional the day you sign it. So the agents are actually very forthcoming with all of those details about the tenant, the management, or the due diligence beforehand, because they know as soon as you sign, it goes unconditional. So their aim is to get you to sign as fast as possible. So totally different from Queensland. And again, you know, you've different under Section 32 in Victoria. So just make sure you ask the agent. If you're not sure, it doesn't matter to just doesn't hurt to actually just ask them. And they're usually quite forthcoming with telling you how things run. Yeah. And that's also to help you as well, because if you hesitate to make an offer, because I think we're conditioned to think that making an offer means it's really, really binding. Well, it's not binding until you sign a contract. So, and different states have a different view on them. I mean, I still take all of my offers really seriously. I would never make an offer on a property I'm not intending to buy. I would be, I can turn around and put an offer in within 3 hours of looking at a property up in Queensland, where I probably wouldn't do that in New South Wales. I probably, do 3 or 4 days of due diligence putting in an offer, because I know what will happen is that within 24 hours I'll get a contract, and then, I'll be under the pressure to sign the contract. And again, different in Victoria. So, there's a bit more negotiation. So it's just once you understand that, you know the pace you have to work against and you have to work with. Yeah, so hopefully that helps you guys. So if anyone has a question, just jump in and I'll mute themselves. I'm just unmuting someone because I can hear them in the background as well. I can hear a lot of background noise. All right, does anyone have any more questions for me? Okay. So Kaolan has a question regarding what is the standard deposit percentage and when is it usually paid upon contract signing? Is it? Okay. So Kaolan, it varies from state to state, but in Queensland you do in Queensland when you get make sure that you say that you pay the deposit upon the vendor and you signing the contract. So upon both parties signing the contract. Now, sometimes the agent will push for you to put in a deposit when you sign the contract, which if it's a hot property, then I would do that. But most of the times I put on the offer that I would give a deposit when both parties have signed the contract, because then I know that, it's a done deal, so I'm putting an offer in. Now, in Queensland, you don't have to give them 5%. You can hold the property, but usually the agent's looking for a deposit greater than 3%, and the reason is that it covers their commission. An agent likes to make sure their commission is covered, and that's in the trust account. And after that, they don't really care too much. So you really need to make an offer with a deposit above 3% for it to work. So 5% is good, but you don't have to make it 5%. Now in New South Wales, it's always 10%. It's always what's specified, unless you come to a negotiation prior with the vendor, and no time is it less than 5%. I believe that it's roughly about the same in Victoria as well. But these things you can check. Always check with the agent and the vendor to make sure. But definitely up in Queensland, you've got a bit more flexibility with the amount deposit you put down. All right. Okay. So Caroline's got a question regarding, do you need to pay another deposit after the 5% or just pay remaining 95% at settlement? You just pay the balance at settlement. So if you give the agent 5% already, you just need to pay the balance on settlement. So the bank will want to see an evidence of the remaining funds. So if you're doing a 70% LVR loan, they'll want to see where the 30% is. So the agent usually issues you a trust receipt, so you send the bank a copy of that trust receipt, plus give them evidence of your rest of your balance of your 25% sitting in your bank account, and then they'll proceed to settlement. And Remy's got a question, do you recommend a local solicitor or does it not matter? Remy, you need a solicitor that works in that state. So Solicitors can only do conveyancing within the state that they're in, unless they're licensed to work in another state. So your Victoria solicitor cannot go to Queensland and do conveyancing or legal work up there unless they've got a license to do it, a reciprocal license in Queensland. Most of the time they stick to their own states. So yes, I would recommend getting a local solicitor who knows, who's seen a lot more of the contract and knows the run of the mill. So Remy, if you are, I believe your where your property is located in Queensland, I have a solicitor I can recommend. So if you need it, just let me know. I'll send you his details. So in each state at the moment, I have a solicitor that I work with in each of the state because we now have properties in each state. We don't have any properties in South Australia or Tasmania, but we have properties in WA, Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria, and we'll work with separate solicitors in all of those states, so we can certainly recommend you solicitors we work with in those states. We've never explored the Northern Territories ourselves. I've looked at a couple of properties for students and vetted a few properties for students up there, but myself, we haven't invested or looked at Northern Territories. Yeah, I get a lot of asked questions about investing in WA as well, and certainly even over the weekend, a few students asked me questions about investing in WA. Now, I don't particularly think WA is a bad place to invest right now, but I think you've got to be able to pick the type of property and the type of tenant. The market is experiencing 25 to 30% vacancy rate across the board. Doesn't mean but they're still doing developments for industrial there. They believe the market's going to turn around. I think that, you know, because WA is a big mining town, it still has a lot of industry there that supports the locals, but the cash in the economy is low, so therefore, you know, people are not buying and spending as much. Their housing prices is totally shot, and people can't move it, so all those impact on spending. And so if you are going to invest in WA, I would say, look, you know, really good, reliable medical, or really good something that has a mixed tenant. I mean, we looked at one in WA that was a mixed tenant on an 8%, and that was a medical, and we thought that was okay. But, you know, overall, I would say you need a strong tenant with a strong lease, and they need to be really anchored in there. So they need to be drawing other tenants in there. It needs to be a destination for why they've got people visiting them. And I will be demanding higher yields, because the only reason you would probably go to that market and stay on the eastern seaboard is that, you know, you're going to get that extremely high yields as well. So that's just my thoughts on WA at the moment. Any other questions, guys? Right. If there's no more questions, we'll call it a night tonight. Thank you very much for all your questions. It's been a fantastic night, as usual. So next week, next week, Monday night, we're back on. And I'll see all of you guys there on the call next week at 7:30. Thank you very much. Thanks, guys.